TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk coming at you this Saturday afternoon. Quite a nice Saturday afternoon, I might add, outside. Hopefully you're driving around, you know, taking care of some last-minute shopping. Keep your radio tuned here to TSN 1290. We have a fun show in store for you. Coming up in about 90 minutes' time from the Globe and Mail, our good friend, frequent guest on this program, Bruce Daubigan, is going to join us. Coming up a little bit later on, 2:30 this afternoon. You know him from CBC and Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot Friedman is going to join us, probably one of the most insightful guys, especially in the hockey world as a whole, and as it relates to the lockout. So we're thrilled that Elliot's going to be joining us towards the end of the show today. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website for the latest NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio to the left of me, Ezra Ginsberg, and to my far left, Richard Pollock. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
All righty, we're off to a start.
Obviously, I should drink a little bit more coffee. I was going to say good morning, but you know, before we start, I'm looking at Richie. You know, Richie's looks good. He's usually wearing some nice clothes. I would probably define his look as maybe an urban look. But Drew, you're wearing you have a beautiful suit on with, you know, looks like possibly a $2,000 suit. I've got a T-shirt. I look like a hobo over here.
Obviously, you spend
your Saturday mornings differently than I do, because I usually just roll out of bed, put my Illegal Curve toque on, and then show up here. But
without a shirt on.
You look good, my man.
Thank you. I try and dress up for you guys every now and then. So I thought I'd do it for you this week.
You're saying good morning to me now, Drew. But at 4:07 a.m., you text me. It's 4:06 a.m. and I can't sleep. What's up with you?
No, that's not true. About midnight last night, you sent me a BBM and said, what's up? I didn't get it until about 4:02 this morning. Said, oh, Richard looks like he messaged me. I'll message him back. See if he's awake at 4 in the morning as well.
Why were you up so late?
Just one of those nights that couldn't sleep. We were just, no good reason.
Turn on the TV or?
Yeah, we turned on the TV, watched some rodeo. Very little option at 4 in the morning.
Who knows? Who knew that there was rodeo on at 4 in the morning?
I certainly didn't. I don't plan to watch it again if I have my choice. But, you know, at 4 in the morning, a little bit of calf roping is something that you can get used to.
You know, it's funny, though. Everyone knows that we've been doing this show for a long time, and it's only one day a week. But I don't think people realize how much time we spend with each other, especially last year.
We spent far too much time together.
And it's text messages like that at 4 in the morning when you're asking Richie what's up that really proves that point. You know, you're going on a vacation, and I think Richie might be going on a vacation as well. So it's good that we're going to have a little time apart from each other, because I think, you know, with this lockout, we almost have been spending more time and talking more with each other than last year. But
that's certainly not a good thing.
4 o'clock in the morning, yeah, just put the TV on and hope that you can go right to bed, because there's not a lot going on at 4 in the morning, which is evidenced by the fact you were watching rodeo.
Exactly. Let's start talking hockey, but we still know that doesn't exist, so let's start talking lockout. Mm-hmm. It has finally sort of inevitably made its move from the negotiating table to the boardroom table. With yesterday's announcement by the NHL that they filed their complaint in federal court in New York City, seeking a declaratory judgment that the lockout is legal. It's a preemptive move to prevent the NHLPA from decertifying and trying to sue them for the brain's blank.
That's okay, Drew.
Thanks.
You know we're used to that. Here. But, yeah. I think the more important thing here is that they're trying to secure...
Antitrust. That was the word I'm looking for. Antitrust.
They're trying to secure jurisdiction here. And so we've had on legal experts in the past few weeks, about sports legal experts, and they've advised us that, you know, New York is probably a more favorable form for the NHL to file in, whereas, you know, Minnesota or California may very well end up being a more favorable place for the NHLPA to file in. So the NHL... just as our legal experts advise, and I forget which one it was who said, you know, NHL is going to file first as soon as they think the NHLPA is going to make a move, and they did. And they filed in federal court in New York, and they think that their odds are more favorable there than in other places, and they get that started. I don't think, you know, all this legal stuff aside, I really don't think there's, you know, a resolution here. I think a resolution will happen regardless of that fact, and then if it doesn't happen, then you can start talking about the court issues.
I would agree with you. I don't think that this move by the NHL is going to end up being significant, simply because I do think that, I mean, if you're following, if they're following the NBA lockout program to a T, and so far they have, you know, this is what the NBA did. They filed the same document in court, I believe, in New York, in federal court in New York.
They filed it earlier than the NHL did, though.
Okay.
They filed, I think, in September.
Okay, so they filed it prior to the, you know, but they filed it before the NHLPA, before the NBAPA,
yes,
could decertify.
That's right, yeah.
So, and that's the same thing they're doing here, is that they're trying to prevent it from the decertification angle from taking effect.
And decertification, in, I guess, in simple terms, I'm not an expert on this area, but decertification in simple terms is to decertify the union. You all come apart, and then you file separately as separate players. You file against the teams and the owners, and you file, and then you have a class action because there's more than.
You file an antitrust lawsuit where, yes, if the NHL was to lose an antitrust lawsuit, the damages are tripled.
The costs are end up being exactly, damages are tripled, and so the antitrust is, you know, gets pretty deep into details of violations of business, and they have antitrust exemptions, and they would be suing under no antitrust exemption. They'd be suing and saying that they're violating the antitrust laws, and
if it gets to that point, you're looking at this won't be a 1 year work stoppage if it gets to that point. I think the most interesting part of the NHL's filing in court yesterday, and you can probably read it. We'll send it out on our Twitter page right now at Illegal Curve, or you can probably read the entire document on illegalcurve.com. The most interesting part is that if the court rules in favor of the NHLPA and allows the NHLPA to eventually decertify, all current contracts, mm-hmm, are null and void.
That's right.
So every contract that has currently been signed, you know, between an NHL team and an NHL player, does not exist based on the document filed by the NHL. Do you think that secondary aspect will have any impact, or is that just so far down the road that it's hard to believe?
You're talking about there's so much uncertainty here. Then the keyword's uncertainty, and so you're dealing with all of that ambiguity. And you're going to say these players, who all they know how to do is play, are going to sit and wait around in court for a year and a half, 2 years, and see if they might get triple damages, and maybe they get more than they would have been paid, but they wouldn't get paid that money until the end, and they would sit by. I just don't see it happening. I think all this stuff is posturing. I mean, they're setting themselves up just in case there's a legal battle down the road. I don't think a legal battle will take place. There's too much to lose. It's the classic case of fighting over a $3.2 billion pie, and leaving the season with nothing, both sides. Does that make any sense? And this is a classic game of chicken, guys. This is two people driving as fast as they can, and the cliff's pretty close right now.
Well, the analogy that was made all week was Thelma and Louise, you know, the end of Thelma and Louise, where they're driving towards, you know, what they think is freedom, and they drive right off the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as they get closer to that drop-dead date, whatever.
Hold on, we're not talking about the fiscal cliff right now, right?
We're not talking about the fiscal cliff. Okay. We're talking about the NHL cliff right now.
Right.
You know, if they continue on this road and they get closer to that drop-dead date, and I don't believe for a second the NHL doesn't have one. I mean,
January 6th,
logically,
probably.
They have to.
They have one that they're not releasing,
yeah,
to the public.
Yeah, but logically, we all know what it is. It's somewhere in the sort of the first 10 days of January,
yeah,
somewhere,
yeah,
around there.
Yeah.
You know, as you get closer to that, even if you think that you're going to get a deal done, sometimes something happens where you slip on the banana peel, and lo and behold, there is no season, and we're into the court system for a significant period of time at that point.
And then we can provide far more information. Let's put it this way, on the structure of our show.
Yeah.
If the season gets canceled, we can spend all the time in the world discussing to you the legal ramifications of what each side has filed and what can come from that. Right now, I don't think it's really overly relevant in terms of a deal. It still needs to get done. I don't think this is going to push either side to a deal again. And I think that's that is because there is so much ambiguity. You don't know what will be ruled. And without any kind of certainty and pretty sketchy case law on this topic, it's guesswork. And it's a lot of money to have guesswork.
Well, for sure. Drew mentioned the NHL playbook and the drop-dead date and all of these things are... These things have been agreed upon a lot earlier. And you mentioned, the ambiguity. And, this news kind of came as a bit of a surprise in the sense, not a surprise, maybe it came, the news came hard Friday afternoon because of the fact that this week really nothing happened. We had those mediation sessions in New York, which obviously didn't produce anything. And you didn't even have the major players there. Gary Bettman and Donald Fuhr weren't there. But, when you start talking about this disclaimer of interest, which is another form of breaking the union themselves. It's not decertification, but it's from what I understand and what I've read and heard that it is Donald Fuhr basically saying that, he doesn't believe he can represent the union, so then the union is going to decertify. I might be wrong about that, but it's a different way of breaking up the union. But to me, this is a way, Drew mentioned the cliff, and I truly believe, Richie, that both sides want this to end. I really believe that they don't want to miss a full year or cancel a season. Right. I truly believe that. Some people might not believe that, but I think this is another strategic move for the NHLPA to speed this process up because, just like we said, the NFL and NBA lockouts involve some type of threat or...
They lost a paycheck today, if I'm not mistaken, right?
And they'll lose at least one more
and
coming
up at the end
of December.
And they'll lose one on the 30th.
This is the thing. I don't think that the season will be lost because of a number of things. This is a main one. If the owners don't move off their stance and it's January 6th, Fair will have no choice, in my opinion, but to put it to a vote.
Of the membership.
And I think they would vote to play.
If that's the case, shouldn't he put it to a vote today?
Yeah. Why not?
All you're doing at this point in time is...
You're wasting time.
Losing your membership's money.
They have their executive committee, and whatever many people they have in there, I think it's 30, one from each team, right? I think that's what it is, Drew. And in any event, I think you raise a good point. You bring everybody together, you call a meeting, and you bring all the players to one place. You give them a full debrief on the situation. You let anybody ask any questions they want, provide all the information necessary, and you put it to a vote.
We should be clear, guys, too, that I believe that the vote has to be 60%. It's not. It has to be that, if I'm not mistaken, in order to accept the deal.
It's 60% for 60-40. Decertification. I'm not sure what it is to accept the deal.
Oh, I thought it was 60%. It might just be a simple majority, 50 plus 1, but...
I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll have to hold off
on that one.
But you know what, Drew? I'm sorry. I was raised, believing in, those democratic principles and all that, and a lot of people in Canada are as well. And when you hear that some of the players liked the deal and it could have possibly won the vote, and we're talking about 2 weeks ago when, that whole charade on the Thursday evening. But at this point, I'm not sure that the NHLPA can get a better deal. I'm not sure. The NHL has thrown everything they can.
Well, I don't think at this point in time the NHL, looking at the calendar and everything else, the NHL doesn't have an incentive, I don't think, at this point in time to offer them a better deal.
Because they've already lost another
month.
They
know it's going to be a 40-game season, you mean?
Right.
Because they know it's going to be... what's the best-case scenario? Today's the 15th of December.
Yeah.
If they started on the... Let's say they started New Year's Day.
Okay.
As opposed to January 15th.
They have to agree to by tomorrow, basically, to play on New Year's Day.
Right.
Or Monday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you're already at that deadline, almost, in terms of the number of games you can play.
Right.
Maybe you can play 52 as opposed to 48. But the NHL is probably willing to forego those extra games of revenue in order to... maintain the offer as currently. They don't have any incentive to improve the offer that drastically because the benefit for improving the offer isn't that great.
I think that's a good point, Drew.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. some terrific dinner specials and drink specials and everything else, always available at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza. So we do recommend you head there tonight, for example. It's $1 off signature cocktails. You also get, you know, the terrific pizza. You get a lunch special if you want to go there for lunch. Looking for a place for an office lunch, maybe? Call Carbone. That would be a good suggestion in my books. I'm actually going to suggest it to the people in my office.
Really?
Yeah.
How come we don't go out for lunch more often?
We don't like you.
No, not the people in your office, just me and you. I know you're in the Polo Park area.
No, I'm saying I just don't really want to spend any more extra time with you is all.
Well, you better like it because we're, you know, have we renewed our bomber season tickets?
No, not yet.
Okay.
We'll have to discuss that.
We should sign up for maybe a 10-year deal, just like the CBA.
Well, except we'll just lock each other out instead. How about that?
Bombers should pay you to be season ticket holders. Watch that, Drek.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll be. Can't be any worse than this past year, let me tell you. Well, actually, it can be. I sat through the Reinbold years.
Sure.
Anyways, getting back to the CBA discussions, Scott Burnside, our friend from ESPN. Oh, sorry, did you want to do your thing from last night?
I was talking to somebody yesterday at a dinner party, and they said, you know, all the players keep, you know, and Drew, you've had a bone to pick about this. The players keep telling the owners, you know, the revenue sharing, you need to share more revenues, you need to do this, you need to do that.
Right. My point being, let me just interrupt you for a sec. My point being, I don't understand why the players think that they have the right, you know, to dictate to the owners how the owners split up their money.
Right.
You know, owners can split their money or not split their money. That's their business. The players, employees don't get to dictate to ownership. That's just my view on certain topics.
Right. And the argument I would make is that they think that because the old CBA was a certain way, and the reality is, guys, the owners are taking the old CBA and they're saying, oh, you like that old CBA? Well, it's in the garbage now.
Which is their problem.
That 57%
they're able to do, by the way.
That 57% of revenue that you guys were getting, no, we're taking it down to 50%. And they're the ones that pay you. So, yeah, guys, that's what they can do.
And Richie has said this a number of times on this program, is that, you know, people keep looking back to the previous CBA as the starting point. But there's no real reason why that has to be the starting point. And in fact, the owners, you know, generally speaking, probably, you know, to some degree have used that CBA, but they don't need to. Yeah. It's a blank sheet of paper every time a collective bargaining agreement, has to be renewed. There's no reason
Donald Fehr keeps telling players, that you negotiate off the last deal. And in theory, you do. But in actual fact, it can be any deal you want now. You don't have to deal on last
Richie, one. It's in the sense that the salary cap is still going to be there and all those other things are going to be there. Yeah, but to think that... See, I think that, and we already know that the 57% that's gone.
That's gone.
I mean, they've already agreed on the 50-50. The big issues now are the term of the CBA, the term limits on contracts. Everyone knows this. Everyone's heard this on TSN radio and TSN TV and all that. I mean, that's old. But, you know, to think that, you know, let's be honest, the times were good for the players for the years after the last lockout. I mean, and now,
the times will be good for the players after
this
lockout also.
And the revenues are going to go up. Yeah. We know that there's going to be a new Canadian television deal. Hockey in Canada is always going to be popular, and you can argue that before this lockout, hockey in Eastern Canada and those markets was very strong as well. Again, the issues here are, you know, can we get those teams in the southern markets back and doing well? And you know, time has proven that isn't the case. But
the biggest issue is that they should do is go out to the players and pay out those franchises, either move them or close them up. Get rid of some of the jobs, and then that's what they should
really
should.
Well, that's the part that, you know, about the, say it does get all the way down to, you know, different filings, the NHL, the NHLPA disclaims and everything, and all the contracts are declared null and void. Then the NHL really at that time has an opportunity to reshape how its league looks.
Oh, it'd be like the NFL that way, in terms of like guaranteed contracts. But the point was, to get back to that earlier point about the revenue sharing, my friend's point was, well, then why don't the players' revenue share? You know, if they're telling the owners, well, the rich teams have to help the poor teams to be successful, then why don't the players share? So the rich players share with the poor players, and they'll tell them how to share their money. So that it's that whole point of basically don't tell us how to share our money, because then we can tell you how to share your money. You don't want to hear that. We don't want to hear yours. We can make a decision to do that for the betterment of the league.
But that's our decision to make. It's not a decision that you should have any input or should really care about.
Well, Drew, I think, you know what? I think that Richie's friend and the point he makes is valid. But I think, you know, there's hypocrisy on both sides. The owners have spent wildly, have signed guys to contracts 10, 11, 12 years that they shouldn't have signed, and they're just as much to blame. And that's why, you know, and, you know, we got a good comment from you know, someone on Twitter, I believe it was two nights ago, that we've remained level-headed. And we're remaining level-headed during this thing because, you know, this isn't about players versus owners. And I said that back in September. I mean, this is about this entire system. And how money gets distributed. Well, you know, of course the players are going to not want to accept a deal when they have, you know, guaranteed contracts and they're under contract and they don't want to have term limits. I understand that, and I understand why the owners want to control costs. But I mean, the owners and the general managers in the first place, they've spent, you know, the money and they've signed guys to 12-year deals. I mean,
that's the problem, because you sign a guy to a 6-year deal and then you ask for a 5-year cap, and that's hypocritical. Right. And that's what we said throughout, you know, being more even keel and somewhat down the line. But there are some portions where they're both telling each other to do things that I think are, you know, unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, they're sticking their nose in areas that they really shouldn't be worried about, in some respects. And I think, you know, revenue sharing is certainly one of those areas. Mm-hmm. And you know, the same can be said for something regarding the owners. You know, worry about what really is of your concern and leave everything else for the other side to determine. You know, on their own.
Yeah.
The CBA, this framework of a deal that one governor presented to Scott Burnside of ESPN.com, really just isn't a revolutionary deal by any stretch of the imagination. It's just a deal in regarding compromise.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's basically what we spoke about in the show last week. I mean, you don't have to be a governor to figure this out.
Yeah. You know, it's assuming the $300 million that was on the table and now is off the table.
But apparently still on the table.
Yeah, it gets back on the table. And we all believe that it truly is still available to them.
Well, there's the reality is there's no table right now.
Well, sure. But, you know, you don't do a 10-year CBA. You do a 9-year CBA, and either side has an opt-out after 7 years. So, you know, okay, pretty reasonable.
Yeah, that's compromise. Yeah.
7 years is too little for me, but okay.
I agree it is also, but the truth is, I mean,
I would be 7-year mutual opt-out, meaning they both have to agree to opt-out.
Which will never happen. Usually, probably.
So that means it would go 9 years.
Right, exactly, which I'd be fine with. Yeah. A 6-year contract limit with front-load/backdiving protection, that's the 5% variance rule, and an 8-year limit for players who have been with a team for 5 years.
Somebody made a good point this week, you know.
Which would mean
go back to that 5% variance, Drew, or the slight variance. If you have 5-year term caps, do you really need the variance as much?
You wouldn't think so, because it's unlikely that somebody's going to work around the salary cap that dramatically at that point. It's unlikely you're going to sign a guy to a 5-year, $25 million deal, and year one and two are going to be $10 million deals, and then the last 3 years are going to be $1.3 million each or whatever.
And then is it worth maybe just having the value of the cap that year being in effect as opposed to an average? I don't know, but I mean, the variance, I think you could if you have the 5-year cap, you could take it down from the 5% to a number that's far more reasonable. So maybe you don't drop 50%, but 5% is kind of odd if you're going to have the cap, right?
You're right. The cap should almost, in and of itself, prevent the variance from being an issue. What I do like, I mean, you know, the 8-year limit for players that have been on a team for 5 years, meaning you draft a guy who's 18, he comes up with your team that's, you know, Mark Scheifele, let's say, he comes up and he's, you know, playing with your team when he's, you know, 20 years old or whatever, and, you know, he plays 5 years with your team or whatever. You know, as a player under contract and then as a restricted free agent. And then at the age of 25, you want to sign him. You can sign him for 8 years. You can sign him during the crux of his prime.
Right, and that's why I think that this, you know, I've tried to, you know, and it's tough to rationalize at this juncture, let's say, in these negotiations, because it isn't just one thing. I don't believe that is the issue here. I think it is the length of the CBA and the term limits. I think the term limits are huge, Drew. But that alone, let's say that, you know, this governor who's proposing the 6-year term limit with the 8-year limits for players on their own team, I mean, the majority of contracts that are of that length are with players on your own team. Okay, the exception would be, you know, Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. But if you look at the, you know, the Tyler Sagans, the Evander Canes.
Right. And I would agree with you, because usually if you want to sign a guy to that long of a deal.
Yeah, you've developed him.
You've developed him. You acknowledge his talent, and you want him on your team for that many years. It's very rare that guys like Parise and Suter do get to be unrestricted free agents at the point of time when they were.
Yeah, those are the big fish in the free agent market. And you know, the amount of guys that get signed to, let's say, over six-year deals is a small percentage. It's got to be less than a quarter of free agents get those deals. I mean, it's a good deal for a free agent if you get a 3 or 4 year deal, you know, in your late 20s or whatever. But to get, so I mean, this is pretty good. I still think that, you know, the NHL really wants that 5 year, that, like, you know, like we talked about last week, Bill Daly, you know, said we want the 5 year, you know, limit. Just,
well,
like
he said, a hill will die on. But apparently that was actually a quote from an owner that he just repeated.
And the reason why it's the hill that they want to die on is because they know their own general managers, and push comes to shove, they can't control themselves.
Which is,
which is, of course, completely absurd.
Yeah.
Well, all they'd have to do is listen to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and hear that, you know, Richie himself has said that, you know, even if you're Sidney Crosby or whatever, the most you should get is a 7 year deal, anyways.
I mean, baseball's figured that out. I mean, especially for pitchers, but anybody really. Again, wants to go farther. Like this week, for example, Josh Hamilton gets a 5 year deal.
Yeah,
I assume that was the only 5 year guaranteed deal, or maybe one other offer. He got, you know, 5 years, $125 million. You know, Texas was willing to go 4 years with a kicker for a certain amount of games played, I think, for 5 years. The idea is everybody sees the risk and they don't want to offer over 5 years. In the NHL, he would have got a 10 year deal.
But Richie, if we're playing fantasy general manager here, okay, you're Minnesota Wild owner Craig Leopold, mm-hmm. and all that, and you see Suter and Parise out there.
Mm-hmm.
Why go for 12 years at their age, at 26 years old? Why not go for 7 years? Because
somebody else is out offering eight.
Exactly.
Let me ask you guys this question. We have to go to break, and I want to leave it at this, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
Yeah.
Would NHL teams be better off hiring real business people as general managers as opposed to, in many cases, ex-players? Don't answer.
Okay.
Leave it there. We'll come back with that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. I love you, Ezzy, but honestly, how many times have we been in the studio where you turn off my mic?
Mine too.
And no, your headphones.
Yes, my headphones, and not your own.
At least, I want to say, 30 times.
Yeah, it's not the most difficult thing in the world.
My mom thinks you two need couple counseling.
No, Ezzy and I are tight. We had a good time the other night at the Heart and Stroke Foundation, the Festival de Voyageur beard kickoff event. That was a good time.
The best was when we got introduced as local celebrities. It was at Le Garage.
Which really just devalues the word celebrity, yeah. I think.
If somebody was introducing you as local celebrity, you sure it wasn't in your garage?
That's funny. Well, no, it's funny, though, Richie, because, you know, for those who don't follow the website or the radio show, we went there and we got a straight shave.
Tell you what, if they don't follow the radio show and they're listening right now, that's a real significant problem.
I mean, we get first-time listeners.
Yes, we do.
You know, I bet there's somebody out there that's a first-time
listener. First time last time.
Yeah, first time last time. But, you know, so there was a straight blade shave-off. There was people from Burns and Black. It's a hair salon in the Exchange District. Drew goes there all the time for his waxing needs. And we got this straight blade shave. So Drew gets introduced as local celebrity, Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio. Drew Mindell. Drew steals the mic from the guy and goes, "Can you call me Mr. Mindell?"
Really?
That didn't happen.
Oh.
Not by a long shot.
No, it didn't happen.
Did not happen.
It's going to be fun. We're going to grow beards for 10 weeks. Raise money for the Heart Stroke Foundation. Then there's going to be an event at the end, and they, you know, give some awards for all the beard categories. We're in the fun beard category.
Grizzly Adams had a beard.
Yeah.
And in fact, we're dressing Ezzy up as Grizzly Adams.
Yeah.
Which is definitely by
10 weeks.
By the middle of February, we're making Ezzy walk around town wearing a flannel shirt and carrying an axe at all times.
Yeah. And I think we were going to call me Ezra Bunyan.
Yes, I believe that's exactly right.
Richie's lost it. Yeah.
Back to the question before the break. This goes not only for NHL teams, but it goes for pro sports franchises as a whole. Would they be better off hiring businessmen to run their day-to-day operations than ex-athletes as general managers?
I think it's a mix, Drew. I think it wouldn't hurt to have a little bit more business acumen infused in the front office. I do think at the end of the day, you know, when you're dealing with contracts and such, that would be important. But in terms of the actual general manager job, I still think at the end of the day, you need to be able to identify talent.
Right.
If a businessman is dropped in there and cannot identify talent, I don't care how good his contracts are or how bad they are. If you can't, you have to be able to put the two together.
But you can hire scouts to do that.
No, you need the GM needs to have an idea too, though, Drew. And you have the synergy between the two. And if you can't identify talent, then how do you sign it? You know, I'd rather have, like, for example, like a GM. you know, you have like a Rick Dudley or sometimes like a Dale Tallon. Dale Tallon wasn't great at contracts, and it cost him. You know, the fax mishap, right, which may or may not have been Stan Bowman's fault. We don't really know. But there was an issue in terms of contracts that he gave out and, you know,
sure,
all that
stuff. You're talking about the post-Stanley Cup year when they lost
even,
a bunch of
even
players.
Even the pre, you know, they won with Hossa, but like, was the Hossa contract great, right, considering what they had coming up?
He got a lot of years.
They won the, and they, yeah, he did, and they
11?
Won the Cup.
12. 11? Was it 11 or 12?
I don't remember how many it was. Remus will check into that. But the point is, he accumulated talent. And he's
to
doing
be
that
in that
again.
Position that he won the
exactly.
Stanley Cup. So you could say, right, sorry to cut you off, Richie, but you could say, you know, he might not have had the best business foresight.
Right,
but
exactly.
He won the Stanley Cup for the first time in how many years in Chicago. So who really cares if, you know, he lost a few players if he gets the results?
He accumulated talent, and I think that's the hardest thing to do in the sports.
The Dave Bolins, the Andrew Ladds, those guys.
Because if you accumulate talent and overpay the best players, you're probably in a better position than if you, you know, can't accumulate talent and are paying certain players what they're supposed to be paid.
So, yeah, you know,
that aren't great players.
I agree, again, almost 100% with Richie.
Hossa's deal was 12 years, $62.8
million.
It's
a long deal. I mean, and he's a good player, but that's going to take him well into his early 40s.
But the cap, I think, was whatever it was, 5.7, 5.6, yeah. Whatever
he's
it was.
He's only in year four of that deal.
And I realize it wasn't a huge cap hit, but the term and all that stuff, and Hossa's a great player, don't get me wrong, but just with all the impending cap issues they had, you know, with guys like Versteeg, who Hossa's obviously far superior than the guy like Byfuglien, who they missed really since he left there, and other players. That obviously has proven to be an issue.
Yeah, Richie, in the NHL, and I can speak more about this because I know the NHL better than the other leagues, but you've got a lot of ex-players as GMs, and you know, a lot of the time, you know, we've had Tom Lynn on the program. He was the former assistant GM with the Wild. A lot of the times you have those business guys as the assistant GMs.
That's right.
Because a lot of people, and we've had Frank Provenzano of the Dallas Stars as well. He's the assistant GM there.
Those
guys will handle those contract issues, so the GM will set it up.
Exactly.
And then the assistant GM takes care of the X's and O's.
And that's the way I think it's well suited. I should point out, Gary Lawless just texted me, Tallon wasn't there actually when they won the cup. It was Bowman as GM, but it was really Tallon's team.
Well, Richie gets...
That's it, because they had fired Tallon after, after the mishap, right?
How come Richie gets texts from Gary Lawless? I want a text from Gary Lawless.
I understand why Gary wouldn't want to text you.
Yeah, because then you text him back.
I have an iPhone now. I think he has a BlackBerry still.
That's
so
true.
We used to have quite a productive BBM relationship. But he broke up with me. Well, at least I guess I broke up with him because I have an iPhone. But anyways, continue, Richie.
Fascinating.
Well, no, and so, Ezzy, I think your point is really was well said in terms of, you know, like a guy like a Nieuwendyk builds, you know, is the GM. And Joey Nieuwendyk's a smart guy, but a guy like Provenzano can come there and help for contracts and such. And
did Nieuwendyk go to Cornell?
I think he did, yes, that's right. Good call. But that, you know, same thing.
I almost got into Cornell.
You mean onto the campus just to walk around?
You mean like corn puffs?
Exactly.
Corn puffs, right?
I had corn puffs while looking at the
puffs.
Cornell website.
I think it's and I think the teams are really moving in that direction. But I don't think you can really have one or just the other at this point. You know, only talent or only contracts. And I still think the talent evaluation will be more important than the contracts.
Doesn't this go back to a little bit like, you know, I'm a big believer of the money ball, Billy Beane in that book. And I bet a lot of people out there have either read the book or seen the movie now because that was a big movie. But, you know, you've got the stats. This day and age, you've got the advanced stats and, you know, on-base percentage and all that. But a guy can look at all those stats, but if he doesn't really see the talent there.
That's right.
I mean, so Billy Beane was a talent guy. I mean, he could see the numbers, but that's the reason why he was successful because...
Billy Beane's almost an extreme, though. He like, disassociates himself really with the player as much. I think the problem with the stats stuff in general without talent evaluation is you can look at 3 years of a player and see his last 3 years and try to project what he's going to do in the next year.
And that's
problem
what a business guy might do.
But maybe. But the problem is if you don't have the talent evaluation and the guy's lost a step or the guy doesn't do this as much well or this as much or his game has changed in this way, then you cannot cannot project what could be a downturn in his numbers, or you can't project if you see improvements, and you see improvements in his character and things like that, or an upward trajectory. So I think, you know, Tom Lynn's spoken about that. I've heard him at conferences before. It's very much backwards project. It very much helps you look at something and
past performance doesn't necessarily predict future performance.
Also true, but it helps you. But also it helps you, you know, what happens is a lot of times it helps you rationalize what went wrong. So this has always been my issue with the stats angle. And don't get me wrong, I think they are valuable. But one of the issues is, you know, I always hear guys, you know, you'll hear some guys in the media say, this is more, I think, Toronto stuff, they lost because they got outshot. Well, that doesn't really mean anything.
Why did they get outshot? That's what I want to know. Don't read the stat, because I can tell you they got outshot. Anybody
can
tell you.
They got outworked.
Well, that's a question. Did they get outcoached? Was there a strategy element to that? So those numbers are valuable when mixed with the proper hockey analysis. But without the proper hockey analysis, I think they don't carry as much value.
Sure. Strictly looking at numbers without looking at them, you're saying the context matters.
Context. And in a hockey, from a hockey prism.
So we have to hope that Alex Anthopoulos is listening and listening to Richie, and he's not going to trade for R.A. Dickey, I guess.
Well, I mean, that's a separate issue entirely.
No, but the point here is that, you know what, general managers, they have a difficult job, and they obviously have, you know, assistants and entire staff around them, but...
But it's also what we said about general managers, and we've said it on this program a ton of times. They don't use the leverage that is available to them. And so now, by not using that leverage, what the NHL is trying to do in these CBA negotiations to bring this all back together, is they're trying to say, look, you guys couldn't use the leverage that was available to you, so now we have to just take it out of your hands entirely. We have to make it so that every contract is virtually the same.
Which
you don't like. You know, and I don't like as well. I mean, you know, sometimes you can get a great deal if you're a shrewd general manager, but if you take it completely out of, you know, if there's no skill, almost for lack of better word, then, you know, then there's no advantage for being either a good general manager, or a mediocre general manager, or a below average general manager.
Well, again, we talk about baseball. Look at like a Jose Bautista contract. He has a huge year. Anthopoulos says, you know, we're banking on your actually huge year being real. But there's some risk in the huge year not being real, so we'll sign you to 5 years and about, what, $50-55 million. So they take a little bit of risk, but they also strategize. But if you have a cap on contracts and you know exactly about what the guy is going to make, then there's not that creativity, right? You don't have that. I mean, so every contract ends up being somewhat similar, which I don't love. So I wonder, I mean, I know there's a cap. They have a cap. Well, in the former system, they had a cap on each player's possible salary for that year. You couldn't make a 10% of, I think it's 10% of the team cap or whatever it was.
Right, exactly. So there was a maximum amount you could make in one calendar year.
I would like for them,
year.
If they're going to cap contracts in terms of years, I wouldn't mind that they get rid of that cap on a personal contract.
Sure. It's like
now that's going to be the argument. We'll talk about it later with Elliot Friedman about the middle class getting pushed out.
Well, it's like we've said on this program before. The upper class, the best of the best, the cream of the crop, are actually underpaid.
In the market.
Yeah, of course.
Such as yourself.
Such as myself, exactly. Right. Yep. And the middle class and the below average players.
Me and Ezzy.
Me. Well, me and Richie, I'd say, is Richie's in a class of his own.
Sure. Are overpaid. And that's, you know, and that's something that no sports league has really been adequately able to resolve.
So let me get this straight. Drew's upper class, underpaid. I'm middle class, overpaid.
And Richie's in a class that we can't even define. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty is your choice for all your realty needs. You can reach him at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
Give David a call. Good friend of the show. He's the official realtor of Illegal Curve, of course.
Yes.
We also grew up on the same street growing up.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, little nugget right there.
That certainly is a nugget.
Yeah.
Guys, so today is the 15th of December. Where do we go from here?
Well, I think we go we've seen that, you know, the NHL has filed claims with the National Labor Relations Board and, in New York. Yeah, obviously it's difficult. But, you know, we kind of both agree this is posturing and a little bit of a stunt here, but they have to agree on some things because we're very close to that drop dead date. I mean, we have to. You know what, Drew? The only thing that's going to save a season here is some compromise.
Well, but are we in a holding pattern from now until the first week of January?
Apparently so.
Is everything that, I mean, you know, this mediation that they had this week? I mean, did anybody really expect any sort of results to come from it?
It was a waste of time.
That was like the owners like placating the PA, basically.
The PA said, let's have mediation. The owner said, sure, you know, this is how much we care about it. We're not even sending Gary Bettman. We'll send Bob Batterman.
Why were they not in the same room? I understand.
Well, apparently that's how mediation is conducted.
Is it, though?
Initially.
I kind of, you know, was trying to be optimistic about this, even though I knew that this was the second kick at the can here. And I understand that the NHL sent Bob Batterman, who's the senior legal counsel, there for Daly and Bettman, and then, you know, the NHLPA was represented by Steve Fear, I believe. But why couldn't they be in separate rooms and then come into it? I mean,
because if there's no middle ground for them to agree to, why would they even bother to come into the room together?
All that might do is
lead to hard feelings between the two sides.
See, Drew, though, to answer your question again, to me, that's them deciding that we're not gonna try to get to the middle ground because we're waiting till January.
Yeah, I think that's the case.
Bob Batterman isn't exactly a moderate.
No, Bob Batterman is probably even more of a hawk than Jeremy Jacobs might be.
Oh, they call him the battering ram?
They do now, apparently.
It's good to be a good little nickname for him.
Yeah, especially if he was a professional wrestler in his spare time.
Fair enough.
Yeah, well, he's been part of it. You know, he works at Proskauer Rosen.
Yeah.
He's been...
That's the law firm for the NHL. Yeah.
And so he's been involved in other negotiations as well, and he's just generally known for crushing unions or attempting to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's, you know, Bob Batterman, I don't think some guy is going to get the deal actually done. He might work on the wording and such, and he'll have an effect on how it's shaped. But at the end of the day, I don't think somebody's shaking hands with Bob Batterman to get the deal done.
I wonder if he knows Jim the Hammer Shapiro.
Also a relevant question. So we're just, you know, so really, I mean, is it safe to say that you can just sort of turn your brain off for the next couple weeks?
I mean, you hope it wouldn't be. Rationally speaking, I predicted that it'd be otherwise, but I guess I've been using too much rationality in terms of this process because it's been irrational from the outset and it's been unnecessary. So if we look at it that way, Drew, your deadline's about January 6th, maybe at the latest January 10th. Today's December 15th, 16 days, 10, you're looking at 26 days maximum. Maximum, and you got Christmas in there, and you got Boxing Day, you got Christmas Eve. Take a couple of those days out, as we said, New Year's Eve, you know. So you're talking really about 3 weeks, less than that probably, to a drop dead date.
The NHLPA is going to start voting tomorrow to give the executive board the authority to file the disclaimer of interest.
Go ahead.
To take that next step, they need a positive vote from 2/3 of the players.
60, okay.
So, you know, let's say 65%.
66, yeah.
Yeah.
66.
If they don't get that 2/3 affirmation to go forward, is that a sign that the union is pretty much splintered?
I would be surprised if they put it to a vote and didn't get, you know what I mean? Kind of like Bettman. He doesn't go to the Board of Governors room unless he knows he's got his support.
Right.
I would be surprised if they would have announced that and not already have some form of a pre-vote.
But if they do, I agree with you.
Yeah, if they do, then we're talking about, you know, obviously that's a little bit of leverage there that NHL can grasp onto.
It's going to take 5 days. They have 5 days, I believe, to do the voting. And then at that point in time, they have until January 2nd. So of the next year, in order to actually file the results of the disclaimer of interest.
But see, guys,
so if it comes out and only, you know, 58% agree, well, it's a death knell for the union in terms of negotiating, you know, hard line negotiating at that point. At that point in time, they might as well just come out and take a vote on the NHL's last offer, if it's still on the table.
But even though this disclaimer of interest from, again, and I have a very limited knowledge of this, I understand the basics of it, but this disclaimer of interest is supposed to be a quicker process than the decertification process. So if this happens, I'm still under the impression that once it's filed, so in other words, once the NHLPA agrees to go ahead with it, it's still, you know, a week or 2 week process before the union is actually legally broken up or whatever. So really, if we're talking early January going into the second week of January, when are they going to find time to negotiate? If this is what they're you know, busy with, and then the NHLPA, sorry, pardon me, the NHL is busy with their lawsuit. I'm a little bit confused as to how that's going to, you know, aid with the hard negotiations that are supposed to happen, because now they're basically saying that this is where we're going to spend all of our energy. So to me, it there's kind of a conflict here.
Like, you know, they got nothing to do, Ezzy, so they might as well get ready for what could happen and down the road, because they're really not doing anything now. They're not doing anything now.
And they've made that decision. They've made that decision, and I guess because the NHL games have been canceled up until the end of December, what's the point? I mean, sure, in their opinion.
Wouldn't it have been nice to start New Year's Eve and have a huge bash of all 30 teams playing? Of course. But absolutely. You have to probably agree by tomorrow.
And I think I mean, because apparently the PA wants a 10-day training camp, which is probably still too short. You're going to have a lot of groin injuries, I think, early on in the season.
And people have said, and it's exactly right, players who are playing now are going to have a significant edge on players who haven't been playing.
And the ones who are skating at the Iceplex, they're not in game shape.
Yeah, that's right.
You need game shape. I mean, there really shouldn't be a training camp. It should just be daily scrimmages between the players almost.
Yeah.
I mean, just to sort of get their lungs and get their legs under them, because otherwise they're just asking for trouble. They're going to, you know, and we're going to have a segment later on where, you know, because we think the end is somewhere in sight, one way or the other, either there's going to be a season or there's not going to be a season.
Right.
You know, there are some injuries are now becoming, we sort of have overlooked injuries, you know, Brad Richards comes back from Switzerland or whatever, and he's a little banged up in, you know, the middle of October. We haven't really dealt with that. Well, the end's in sight. So, you know, with players, you know, suffering injuries now, it's a little bit more significant than it was a month ago or 6 weeks ago. So we'll be talking about that. But, you know, these guys need to almost ramp up their training at this point in time, just one way or the other.
Well, they have to ramp up their training, Drew, but they also have to know, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, we saw Mark Stewart decided to go play in the ECHL.
Know why Mark Stewart went to go play in the ECHL?
Well, he's tired of doing nothing at the Iceplex.
He wants to be in game shape.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and so, you know, he signs a 2-week or a 3-week contract with the ECHL, and come, if there is a season, he'll have some games under his belt. He'll be able to know that he's got some, you know, lung capacity similar to at least to an NHL season's lung capacity, and he'll be just a little bit ahead. You'll see lots of other guys, I think, sign up for these random, you know, exhibition games, for lack of a better word, at this point.
Right, and we are going to know very shortly whether there's going to be a season or not, and you know, you still, and you know, we talk to people all the time, and, you know, people are asking us when we were out, you know, even for this event, is there going to be a season? And, you know, this whole disclaimer of interest, even though, you know, this is part of the, you know, this is a ploy. It's a move. It's another, you know, move on the chessboard. But, you know, they really have to at least know that the time, next week is an important week again, but you'd have to believe that.
No, I don't think it is, Ezzy.
Well, it's not important maybe for them, you know, but it's important when you consider the window of time closing, because that week of the, you know, Christmas Eve is on a Monday, I believe. That week is, you know, you're not going to get anything done that week. That's a week where, you know, everyone's with their families and everything.
Nothing's going to get done until the first week of January.
And you're leaving it to a couple days.
And then you're leaving it to a couple days. And it's like we said before, you can slip on the banana peel, and before you know it, you've lost the season when both sides would have said, well, we're willing to make a deal. But
it's a very dangerous game that they're playing right now.
It's a game of chicken. It's a pretty good game of chicken.
It's a great game of chicken.
And somebody's going to, and sometimes people lose a chicken.
Oh, yeah. Hey, lost last time.
Yeah, exactly. They lost in 04. You know, they have a good history of losing, in fact. Just quickly before we go to break, all these people saying, well, the NHL didn't want Donald Fear in the room, and now they're doing everything in their power to make sure he's still the representative of the players, you know, about in regards to, objecting to the disclaimer of interest. It's just a legal move.
Yeah,
nothing to read. Don't read any more into it.
Most likely it's not going to happen.
No. Don't read any more into it. It's not that the NHL all of a sudden is dying to negotiate with Donald Fear. It's strictly a matter of needed to do in order to take that next quasi-step down the yellow brick road. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. I get
knocked down. Welcome back. Up again.
To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And I've been reliably informed we have an Instagram now, do we?
Yeah, we've had it for a month.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, you guys are still on the BlackBerry system.
Uh-huh.
Phones. Remus and I are on the iPhones. I mean, you guys got to transfer over. I mean,
I got to tell you, if I never go on the Illegal Curve Instagram, I'm probably okay with that.
Really?
It's good. It's fun. It's
really?
Good times.
Do you spend your time on Instagram there, Richie?
I've seen the Illegal Curve Instagram.
I assume it's what? At Illegal Curve or whatever the Instagram version
is? At Illegal Curve, yes.
Okay.
I think people should add Illegal Curve on Instagram.
I think they should too.
We just promised not to send any pictures of Drew up there.
I believe there's probably already some pictures of me. Weren't you taking Instagram photos last week when we were at the Christmas Miracle?
Well, no, but the thing is, with Instagram,
it was a Christmas Miracle as he learned how to use Instagram on his iPhone.
That's true.
No, I was just, we use those for the website, but, you know, Instagram's kind of cool. I mean, obviously Facebook bought it, but it's just neat. You can put filters on your pictures, so we have some good Illegal Curve pics up there.
Why don't you take pictures of us during the next break and post them on Instagram?
Okay.
There you go.
Action shots.
You can follow
Illegal Suit.
Follow Illegal Curve.
Yeah, everybody needs to see that suit. You know, is that Italian? That's Italian, isn't it?
Drew, wool pants are an interesting choice.
They're very warm. I'm all about the warmth in winter. I'm just too cold.
It's a nice day out, though, as you said earlier.
It is a nice day, but it doesn't matter. I'm just always cold, so I'm wearing the wool pants. I'm looking forward to growing this beard. I'll have some facial warmth.
Yeah, no, it is. And that's what the Voyageurs did back in the day. They grew those beards to stay warm. And then they'd get the maple syrup in there and everything, which I'm looking forward to, because then, you know, you're eating maple syrup, and then some of it gets stuck in your beard, and then you can keep it for later.
Now all the maple syrup's only being caught in your chest hair.
It's true. You should probably start wearing a shirt when you're eating your pancakes, is all we're saying. Anyways, World Junior Hockey Championships. At least we know that is going to take place, right?
I'm pumped up. I love the World Juniors.
And you'll be able to hear all the action here on TSN 1290.
And we should probably have announced now.
We're not announcing anything.
Okay, all right. Drew's that was a corporate decision right there. Yeah, I was about to announce something. And Drew, see the motion that Drew just gave me there?
It was interesting, but I'm actually pumped for the World Juniors this year because
NHL talent?
It's best players on best, because my issue always with the World Juniors is it's not actually best on best, because you have, you know, Canada last year having, like, what, 8 guys playing the NHL?
Yeah.
And how do I actually judge that? This year, best on best. I can get on board with an idea like that.
So the games will. So the Team Canada had their, you know, their tryout camp, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, Drew, and, you know, just let me quickly get in here.
Yes, please.
Richie and I were talking about this before the show. Matt Dumba didn't even make the team this year.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Dumba was drafted, I believe, 5th or 6th overall by the Minnesota Wild. I'm a huge fan of his. I think he might end up being the best defenseman. And I know he's in there and stuff. I really like Matt Dumba's game. He didn't make the team. Ryan Murphy made the team.
Let me ask you to start with that. How surprised are you that Dumba didn't make the team?
I'm very surprised. You know, and I'm surprised because, you know, we had Craig Button on the show before the draft last year, and he was talking about Dumba, and then he was also talking about some of the other defensemen. Ryan Murray, who's injured and won't be playing.
He would be on this team otherwise.
Right, Columbus Blue Jackets defenseman drafted 2nd overall, but he was saying that, you know, well, we all know that last year's draft, the 2012 draft, was a defenseman-heavy draft.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he was saying a guy like Matt Dumba, you could easily make the argument he's a top 3 draft pick. But the reason why I was a little bit surprised is because if you look at the team, you've got guys that are talented offensively, you know, Dougie Hamilton, Griffin Reinhardt. And I was a little bit surprised. Exactly, and Murphy.
Murphy and Hamilton are more talented offensively than Reinhardt.
Yep.
And Riley's more offensive.
And Dumba, too, is more of a defensive guy. But I was thinking they'd want him for his defensive prowess. So I'm surprised. You know, but, again, I was telling this to Richie, and I don't want to say this is the reason. But Ryan Murphy plays for Kitchener. Steve Spott, who's the Canadian national junior team coach, his club team is Kitchener. And I'm not saying that, you know, he would have favorited his own defenseman, but I'm just saying, you know,
it wouldn't shock me. I mean, we all remember what happened in Toronto when Pat Quinn went with
Cujo.
Brodeur over Cujo. That poisoned the relationship there for...
permanently.
I mean, he left as a free agent the next year.
Yep.
I mean, so, you know, sometimes the head coach... well,
he ended up being better for them because they got Belfort.
I don't want to start a conspiracy theory. I'm just saying, I mean, that you can't overlook that.
But the thing is, it's a fair point, but the thing is, their defense is so stacked this year. The defense is great. You mentioned Murray, and that obviously would have been a great addition. And Dumba's a really good player. You know, he can be a little bit erratic at times, and I think that's something they may want to shy away from. But when you have guys like Riley, Hamilton, Reinhardt, Ouellette, Harrington, Murphy, and Weatherspoon, I mean, you're pretty stacked back there. You might want to go for a little bit more security. And also, the truth is, you know, how much was he going to crack even the top 4?
How do they feel about him maybe in a lower role or maybe as a seventh defenseman? Those are things you have to take into account, too. How will he accept a role like that?
And that's what we spoke about last week, is we weren't sure if Team Canada was going to take the best players available, or they're going to take the guys who they thought might fit into the team better.
Well,
you know, fit
is,
their role better.
If you like, you know, you watch TSN and stuff, you see, you know, McKinnon, Nathan McKinnon having made the team as that 13th forward. And I would really hope that he's not going to be the 13th forward, because I've always had an issue with the most talent, some of the most talented players, maybe based on age or whatever it may be, aren't given as much ice time. Then you see them next, you know, within 9, 10, 11 months in the NHL.
Well, there's two 17-year-olds.
15 months in the NHL, and they're dominating at 18. So I don't know if I love that idea.
They'd say, well, you know, the argument is, well, just to get him some experience in playing for Team Canada.
It doesn't matter.
I know. I agree with you. Two 17-year-olds on the team, Nathan McKinnon, who everybody, you know, knows ad nauseum about, and Jonathan Drouin, his teammate in Halifax.
And that's apparently why he made it over Sean Monahan, who the people say is a more talented player. The Drouin and McKinnon's chemistry, it's such that it's too good, really, to pass up.
Well, I don't mind ideas like that, because you do need some chemistry in tournaments like this. I realize that they put these players together sometimes, and over the course of their careers, they have played together. But, you know, you look at it, and look what Canada did. You know, you had in 2010, you had Getzlaff, Perry, and then you had the garbage line of Thornton, Marlowe, and Heatley.
You're talking about the Olympics.
Yeah, but they all played together. I mean, the line really shouldn't have been there, I didn't think, but the Getzlaff-Perry combination you play, Bergeron played with Crosby. So you try and keep connections and some kind of chemistry.
Well, if you're taking two 17-year-olds for their chemistry reasons, you're not taking them you're taking them to play them.
Well, you think so, exactly, because if it listed as a 13th forward doesn't mean actually on the depth chart he's going to be for the coach.
Right.
And if you're picking one and because they play well with another, you assume they're both going to have somewhat of a role in playing a regular shift.
See, and I think, you know, just on the topic, I mean, people, again, we mentioned this, I think, last week when we did the show at St. Vitale Center, but Canada hasn't won in 3 years. And last year, they had to fight to win the bronze. And you know, this year, they're obviously going to be playing in Ufa, Russia. But I think it's clear, you know, that I think we'd all agree that this team is better, even without Ryan Murray, but you've got, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. But I think, you know, a lot of the focus has been on the defense, but I think, the forwards are really good. I mean, Ryan Strom is dominating the OHL. Shifley, this is his second year. I mean, yes, and it is, you know, it is really a 19-year-old team, right? And, you know, you've got Boone Jenner and Ty Ratty, who I really like. I think this is, I think... You know, and I am going to, you know, throw out a prediction here. I think Canada is going to win this year because, you know, even in goal where, you know, we're not sure, you know, if how good Malcolm Subban's going to be, but he's tearing up the OHL right
now. Well, let's talk about
goal. And he's playing very well. He's playing very well for Belleville.
Let's talk forwards first.
Okay, let's talk forwards first.
As you mentioned, forwards. But I think, you know, you look at that, Nugent Hopkins, obviously, is the best player in the tournament as far as I'm concerned. In terms of not only just, I think he's the best player in the tournament. I think you're putting him on a line, ideally, right now with Huberdeau, Jonathan Huberdeau, excuse me. I always call him Justin. Jonathan Huberdeau, who would have made Florida last year if not for his size. Skill-wise, he's there.
Yeah.
This year, very well, may have made the team, may make the team if it is the season. And then you're putting Shifley, obviously, the Jets on the right wing there.
Yep.
But then you got Ryan Strom, who, as he mentioned, for Niagara, has been dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of other guys, and people really like Brett Ritchie. There's a lot of other pieces up front here who can do different things, and I like the idea of having that dominant first line. So, you know, we'll really see a lot about Shifley, and I think it's an important tournament for him. But the forwards I have confidence in as well. The goalies always seem to be kind of a sketchy point for Canada. You know, you'll have your guys who end up making it, like the Luongos or the Flurries or the Prices, but you just as well have
the Jamie Storrs.
Yeah.
How do you like that for a blast from the past?
I mean, there's so many. Jeff Glass.
Yep.
I mean, so many of these random goalies never
Wedgwood,
had to make it.
Wedgwood, who hasn't, well, he still might make it, but
that's
he hasn't made it
Drew,
yet.
And you were there, too, in Grand Forks in 2005. They won that tournament, you know, with Beauchemin and Glass as their goalies. So, and to be honest with you, nothing being taken away from them, but Malcolm Subban, I think, you know, is going to be a pretty good goalie. The way he's playing right now, he was a second-round draft pick first-round draft pick of the Bruins.
When you're that young and you're a goaltender in a pressure situation, I think your confidence is very fragile.
Yep.
I agree.
And with the defense playing in front of him, like the Dougie Hamiltons and these guys,
and sometimes
Reinhardt, I mean, he's got such good defensemen in front of him.
Right.
He doesn't have to get a shutout every game, and I think he's going to be fine. And again, you know, Richie's talking about the forwards, but really, if you look at the team from top to bottom, it's hard to argue that any other team is better than Canada, and that's why they get to the medal round every year. They haven't won a gold in a little while here, but for any other team, their track record, the only other team that's even close to Canada in this tournament is Russia. But I think Malcolm Subban's going to be fine. I think
is he your starting goaltender? Because I mean, I know he wasn't good in the pre-tournament exhibition games, but the evaluation games.
Yeah, they played
the University of Alberta.
Yeah, they lost to the University of Alberta.
They lost one.
That means nothing.
Is he your goaltender?
That's what they're saying. He is going to be the starter.
Yeah, I mean, but you know how goaltenders work.
Sure.
Like, let's look at the past few tournaments.
He could be your starter, and then
Bergeron goes into the Olympics. Yeah. Who finishes?
Luongo.
Kudryavtsev goes into the Olympics 2002. Who finishes?
Berdur.
So who knows?
It's interesting, too, because the tournament's in Russia, Drew, they bring three goalies, which you wouldn't have. If the tournament was in Canada, you just have your two goalies, right? So they're actually going to be bringing three goalies there, but only two of them.
There's a goalie exemption as opposed
to
player forwards and defensemen. There's no exemption.
And I don't think that they've named, because Jordan Binnington, who's a St. Louis Blues draft pick, all these guys are OHL goalies. Jake Patterson, who's a Detroit Red Wings draft pick, a late draft pick that year, I believe. I don't know if they've named, but some people say they like Patterson better. Other people say they like Binnington better.
They won't name anybody until after they have some exhibition games coming up in Russia, and they won't, or maybe they're in Sweden or something.
No, I think they're in Finland. We'll check on
that. Finland, okay. But they won't name their starting goaltender until after those games. Quickly, right up against the break here, give me one player who's going to be your breakout player here.
This tournament, I think.
Just for Canada?
Yeah, just for Canada.
I think Dougie Hamilton takes over this tournament on the back end.
I like that call, Richie. They believe that he's going to be their number one defenseman one day.
He takes over the tournament, yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know what? I'll go with Mark Scheifele. You know, why not give the Winnipeg Jets draft pick some time. Hey, I got the first Mark Scheifele interview in St. Paul. That's a fact.
That's true. But you know what, Ezzy? That prediction is he needs to have a big tournament. I know Sheveldayev came up this week and says, you know, the point production, blah, blah. I don't believe it at all.
Yep.
I think he's trying to take pressure off the kid.
Yep.
I think he needs to have a great tournament, not only because of the poor performances overall internationally, but because he's been given a great opportunity with some of the most. Ryan Nugent Hopkins is one of the most gifted passers to come around in a while, and Huberto is a great player, so he's got a lot of opportunity. He started last year in the first line, did he not? And he dropped to the bottom.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens this year.
Yeah, I agree, Richie. I think he's gonna have less pressure on him, he's gonna play well in Russia.
It all gets underway Boxing Day, December 26th, 3 a.m. start time between Canada and Germany.
You coming over to watch?
I won't be. You can hear the game live here on TSN 1290, and of course available on TSN television. All the games, all the important games, the Team Canada games, will be here on TSN 1290. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You're still looking for something to do for New Year's Eve. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club is your destination. They have two different shows. The first show is at 6 p.m., and then there's the 10 p.m. Gala New Year's Eve show. Both shows feature Steve White. Very funny comedian. You've seen him everywhere. Any place you see comedy, you've seen Steve White. So you can check out Rumors for that. Give them a call at 204-488-4520, or you can go on their website, rumorscomedyclub.com. That should take care of your New Year's Eve plans, and just a fantastic lineup of comedians coming in the new year. The Incredible Boris, Glenn Foster, that Canadian guy, Rob Schneider. That's a concert series event. There's going to be Kelly Taylor. He's from Saskatchewan. Very funny. Tom Green, another concert series event. Just top-notch comedy coming to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club for New Year's Eve and in the new year. Gentlemen, Roman Hammer looks back in the news, mainly because he did not back off of his initial comments regarding getting the season started. And to his credit, I think that's a credit to Roman Hamrlich, in that he didn't say I was misquoted or my Twitter account was hacked or I didn't really mean what I said, even though I said it and it came out of my mouth.
Matthew Barnaby,
exactly. What Matthew Barnaby,
former guest of the show?
Yeah, Matthew Barnaby. That was a bit of an interesting tweet. And if you don't know what we're talking about, we can't say it on air. Just Google it; you'll find it on your own. Scott Hartnell, the Philadelphia Flyers,
one of my favorite hockey players.
Combated Roman Hamrlich, and he made the following quotes. And he says this to our sister station in Ottawa, the Team 1200. I can't wait to see what his teammates do when guys go after him. Hartnell told Team 1200 in Ottawa, to sell the Players Association under the bus and to stick up for a guy like that is going to be hard. I think Troy Brower said it best in his comments. Troy Brower had earlier called Roman Hamrlik selfish, and he didn't know how he could trust Hamrlik as a teammate. When the NHL season gets underway, assuming it gets underway, as a teammate, would you have a problem sticking up for Roman Hamrlik?
No. I wouldn't have a problem with sticking up with Roman Hamrlik. He's entitled to his opinion. His opinion may or may not be correct. It depends on your point of view. But he's allowed to have his opinion. That's the whole point. So if he says, I think we should play, and maybe based on that, they should play. So in any event, if you're playing hockey, you're playing to win. The point is to play to win. The point is to play to win the cup. You stick up for your teammates regardless of their point of view. It's like Tim Thomas. He might have caused some strife in Boston for his political views. If somebody runs Tim Thomas, you stick up for him.
Yeah, you don't not stick up for him because he happens to be a member of the Tea Party.
Shows a lot more if you don't stick up for the guy on the ice than if you than the issues off the ice.
I want to chalk this one up to the fact that players are frustrated and they want to be playing. And like I mentioned at the beginning of this segment, Scott Hartnell is one of my favorite players. He might be one of my favorite player the way he plays. Scotty Hartnell,
you're the John Gruden of illegal curve hockey.
You are,
every player is your favorite player.
Right.
No.
Look
hold
at this guy.
On.
Oh, he's a great quarterback.
This is the best fourth line player I've ever seen.
I love him.
It might be because I interviewed Scotty Hartnell twice last year in the Philly Flyers dressing room, and he laughed at one of my questions and told me it was a good question. But, you know, the guy can score 30-plus goals. He can hit. He can fight. Anyways, I think that he's frustrated.
And he figured out that you were interviewing after he had a shower, but you were in a towel?
he said that I wasn't able to shower with the rest of the team. But, you know, these guys are frustrated. And you know what? When the season starts again, people will always, I guess, remember that Roman Hamrlik said this. You think Troy Brower and Brooks Like, who represent the Capitals in these negotiations, are not going to protect him? That's baloney. I mean, Roman Hamrlik is, I'm sorry, he's brave. He's brave for speaking his mind. Because all we've heard over the last 90-plus days are NHL players saying the same thing. Basically, we're not getting a fair deal. We're giving. We're not receiving. All that stuff. I mean, Roman Hamrlik, and to be honest with you, the fact that the guy is standing by his opinion and he's saying, you know what? Let's take a deal. Let's start playing hockey. Yeah. Let's put this to a vote.
I agree.
That
stands by himself.
That
you may not agree with
him. I'm sorry, Drew. That takes balls.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that Scott Hartnell's comments, I mean, look, everybody's entitled to their opinion. And who is Scott Hartnell to say? I mean, and he's entitled to his opinion as well.
That's true.
I mean, I think it's a foolishness or a fallacy to really believe that there's going to be this lingering animosity.
No. There won't be.
Once the puck drops and the testosterone gets flowing and you see somebody running your teammate, all of a sudden you're going to back off and say, no, I'm not going to help that guy. He was against the Players Association.
Hartsy is just upset. That's right.
Hartsy?
I called him Hartsy. His Twitter name is Hartsy19.
I know.
He's just upset. I mean, he's probably thinking, you know what? Hamrlik's not helping anything right now, you know. And somebody asked him about it, and he was speaking from the heart. When the
no pun intended. One second here. They're all tough. When Hamrlik's the only one to speak up in public, they're all tough going after him.
Yep.
What I wonder is when everybody else who agrees with Hamrlik, and there's a lot of guys who do, I'm sure, if they all speak up, then where will Hartnell say? He can all be tough, you know. A lot of bullies, and it's funny. They're all picking on the guy that doesn't agree with them, and he's entitled to not agree with them, and they're entitled to their opinion that is different than his.
How many other guys are there out there? Like, we've mentioned a guy like Sean O'Donnell before that might only have 1 year left in the NHL. Because let's be honest, Hamrlik has at most 2 or 3 years left in the NHL. He's
maximum.
In his late 30s. So,
maximum.
You know, let's look at this from not just the perspective of guys in their mid to late 20s.
I see. This is the problem, is that if you go out another year, every year young guys come in and take older players' jobs. It happened last time. I think it was around 20%.
Yep.
If it happens again, you don't know what the landscape of the cap is, especially with teams who are over the cap and maybe they have to get down below the cap or lower. They might go, you know, you have 2 years of draft picks coming through and they're cheap.
Yep.
So a lot of these older players are going to push out the door. And I'll tell you something. Scott Hartnell, when he's older, and by the way, he pays a rugged style. So, he, you know, maybe he's 35, 36.
As opposed to 38, 39.
And he comes he becomes a free agent. I think his deal expires around then. And there's a lockout. I wonder what Scott Hartnell's point of view will be then. So look at it through both perspectives.
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, I think it's a myopic and small-minded view to try and challenge a guy for what they believe. It's a fair point what you said. I mean, I don't agree with Tim Thomas's beliefs, but I do think that the Boston Bruins would have his back on the ice.
They might not like him off the ice, but
people think that their favorite hockey teams are like their rec league teams, where everybody goes out and hangs out together as a group. Yeah. 20 guys go out afterwards and have a beer together.
But I think you equate it more to like your when you were playing, when you were younger and you're playing traveling hockey or whatever it may be. You were put together on a team that you didn't put together with your buddies in rec league.
Yeah, and just like these guys don't get to pick who they play with.
Exactly,
either.
And you play on the team, and there's a few guys you didn't like on the team. I think we all would say that, and they may not have liked you or whoever it was. But if somebody went after your guy in the corner, you did like him or not, you stick up for him.
Richie goes into the corner, I stick up for him. But, Drew, if you were going into the corner, I don't know if I'd stick up for you. Just kidding.
I was reading a book about the 86 Mets. I can't remember who the player was.
Mookie Wilson?
No. The 86 Mets got into a...
Lenny Dykstra?
There was a bench-clearing brawl with the 86 Mets, and there was more than one. And in this brawl, one player never left the bench. He didn't go out and join his teammates of the bench.
That's a no-no.
Doc Gooden, Darryl Strawberry.
Not a prime name that jumps to mind. Given the amount of drugs that Strawberry and Gooden and were on, they definitely went out and fought at that point in time. Yeah.
Well, Drew, the way your memory is working right now, I'm not sure if you were on drugs during the 80s either.
It's fair enough as well.
You're in high school, so I don't...
But that one player who didn't defend his teammates was immediately shunned.
Mm-hmm.
And so
he should have been.
I agree.
To some extent, I agree as well. In that, when you're going to battle with your guys on a daily basis, you go to battle with them regardless of what they believe in off the field what they've said off the field.
Right. You stick up for your teammates no matter what. And that's why I think that, when the NHL starts again. And by the way, Roman Hamrlik is a big boy. He can handle himself. He's been in the NHL for a long time. He's a physical guy. He's not afraid to go in the corners with anybody. But, I really don't believe anybody's... Let's put it this way, Drew. Nobody's going to be taking shots at him specifically because he spoke out.
I would hope not. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail is going to be joining us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.